Thank you. became Nara and Narayan, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances to control the senses. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As King Rishabha advised his sons, tapasya, a voluntary acceptance of penance for realization of the transcendence, is the only duty of the human being. It was so done by the Lord himself in an exemplary manner to teach us. The Lord is very kind to forgetful souls. He therefore comes himself and leaves behind necessary instructions, and also sends his good sons as representatives to call all the conditioned souls back to Godhead. Recently, within the memory of everyone, Lord Chaitanya also appeared for the same purpose, to show special favor to fallen souls of this age of iron industry. The incarnation of Narayana is worshipped still at Badri Narayana on the range of the Himalayas. Chakshuramilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. You know, there are certain prayers that we say, and some devotees do, I tend not to myself, but before we recite Srimad Bhagavatam, so one of those is Narayanam namaskritya nanam chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tatojayam udire. The first reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayana, unto Nara Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadevi, the operative. So this, of course, this is the fourth verse of the second chapter, which is right at the beginning of Sukha Goswami's speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. So as he begins speaking, he offers his obeisances to different entities and personalities. And one of those, or two of those, is Nara Narayana Rishi. Nara here means Krishna's energy. Nara, of course, sometimes means human beings. Or just the living entities. We have God and the Jiva, the living entities. So Nara and Narayana, taken together, Krishna and his and the living entities together. This is Nara Narayana Rishi. But this is what today's verse is about, this Nara Narayana Rishi. Sometimes he's often, only one of them is mentioned in many places. Sometimes it just says Narayana Rishi. It doesn't say Nara Narayana. In any case, they're sometimes referred to in the singular rather than plural. There are two. And so they're called Lila Avatars. Here's the verse says Turiye, this is the fourth in this list. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says we shouldn't think that this means necessarily that this is exact order of these incarnations. But this is the way they're appearing on this particular list. That's what the fourth refers to here. Because there can be, you can compile lists of avatars in different ways. Here we have, I think in this list, there are 25 in this third chapter of the first canto. But there are more than that. And there are many who come up in the Bhagavatam in different places who aren't mentioned in this list. So, of course, the Lord's incarnations are innumerable. So I'm going to read certain things and make comments. Here it says, in the third, as you go through the Bhagavatam, there are quite a few, actually, just like here, see, Srila Goswami is offering his obeisances from Nara Narayana Rishi. So he may be a form of the Lord that we don't necessarily think about so much, but he's actually quite prominent, or they're actually quite prominent in the stream of Bhagavatam. Nara Narayana Rishi and also Badri Gashram, they come up. You know, here and there throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we hear about them. Well, here, of course, in the list of avatars, and again in the second canto where the list of avatars are given. And then we hear about them in the context of Uddhava, the third canto. For example, this is the third canto, fourth chapter, text 4. Uddhava says, "The Lord is the vanquisher of the distresses of one who is surrendered unto him. Thus he who desired to destroy his family told me previously to go to utter the gospel." So we know the story. Krishna instructed Uddhava just before he passed away. Actually, first, we hear about this not too long ago. Of course, we were reading the 11th canto here of the Bhagavatam. And we heard about Krishna telling Uddhava that he was going to depart. And he told Uddhava that he should actually, basically told Uddhava to take sannyas. He should just go travel and preach. But then Uddhava couldn't leave the Lord, so he sort of stayed with him. And Krishna instructed him, and he told him to go to Bhadrika Ashram to inform the sages there. So there's a quote from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is paraphrasing what Krishna was thinking when he spoke to Uddhava. This is from the 11th canto, chapter 7, text 6, from the purport. So Vishwanath Chakravarti is expressing what Krishna is thinking. Krishna is thinking, "Unfortunately, Nadanarayana Rishi and the great Paramahamsa sages who live with him in Bhadrika Ashram, although most enthusiastic to see me, never had their desire fulfilled. I have been on the earth for 125 years, and the scheduled time is now up. Being busily engaged in my pastimes, I did not have time to give my blessings to these great sages. Nevertheless, Uddhava is practically the same as me. He is a great devotee and shares my own transcendental opulences. Thus, he is the right person for me to send to Bhadrika." So here's some more verses related to that from the fourth chapter, the third canto. "My dear Madhura, I am now mad for want of the pleasure of seeing him. And just to mitigate this, I am now proceeding to Bhadrika Ashram in the Himalayas for association, as I have been instructed by him. There in Bhadrika Ashram, the personality of Godhead in his incarnation as the sages Nara and Narayana has been undergoing great penance since time immemorial for the welfare of all amiable living entities." It's interesting that it says time immemorial because they had their appearance on earth at a certain time. And appropriate to that verse, Srila Prabhupada, or not that verse, the next verse, 3.4.22, Prabhupada says, "There are four dhams, or kingdoms of God, which represent the planets of the spiritual sky, which consists of the Brahma Jyoti and the Vaikunthas. These are Bhadrika Ashram, Rameshwar, Jagannathpuri, and Dwarka." So all Hindus know these char dham, four dhams. Some people, they undertake the char dham yatra. They visit all four of these. So they're in the different directions in India. Of course, Bhadrika Ashram is in the north, in the Himalayas. Rameshwaram is in the far south, and Jagannathpuri in the east, and Dwarka on the west. I was trying to find out more information about where this comes from. And the only thing I could find was Shankaracharya mentioned it. There seemed to be especially, he may have come up with the idea, I don't know. I couldn't find any quote from Shastra that mentions these four dhams. But each one of the dhams, at least for Shankaracharya, they're the Shiva. Lord Shiva is worshipped in each of the four dhams. But there's also, Lord Vishnu is also worshipped there, or nearby in the same general area. Just like Rameshwaram, for example, in the southern part of India, almost on the tip of India. So Rameshwaram is where Lord Ram worshipped Shiva Linga. He worshipped Lord Shiva when he was looking for Sita Devi. So it's called Ram Ishwara. I assume you can take that in different ways, but at least the worshippers of Shiva take that Ishwara, that Lord Shiva is the Ishwara of Ram, because Ram worshipped Lord Shiva there. But nearby there is Setubandha. Setubandha is right where the bridge that crosses over into Sri Lanka. That's at Setubandha. So Lord Vishnu is worshipped there, or Lord Ram is worshipped there at Setubandha. So anyway, these are the four dhams, and one of the four dhams considered especially sacred is Bhadrika Ashram. Bhadrika Ashram is only open, I think it's 6 months of the year. I happen to have the opportunity to go there. One devotee who has enough money took my wife and I and another devotee by helicopter to Bhadrika Ashram and Kedarnath. We went to Kedarnath and Bhadrinath. Actually, you don't fly all the way to Bhadrinath, but at Kedarnath you do. There's actually a helipad right there. When you go to Bhadrinath, you go to Joshimath, and then you drive by car a couple more hours. So, of course, it gets so much snow and cold there that the priests just leave. They leave some lamps burning, I think. They close the place up for 6 months in the winter because it's just covered with snow. Well, many people, of course, they walk there, Bhadrika Ashram. And I was trying to remember because I'm reading that Bhadrinarayan and Naranarayan are worshipped there, probably mentioned in different places. And I was, of course, I went into the temple at Bhadrika Ashram, but I couldn't remember what the deity was. But now I'm sure there's the main deity is Vishnu deity, Bhadrinath, Vishnu deity. But Naranarayan are also there in the temple on a side altar or an alcove or something. So they're also present there, Naranarayan and Rishi. So it said that they're still there performing penance at Bhadrika Ashram. And they're doing this for the welfare of the human society. How that works exactly, I don't know. Well, part of the way it works is that we're supposed to take their example. They're showing that human life is meant for self-realization, for living a simple life and performing austerity in the sense of devotional service to the Lord, giving up sense gratification, engaging in service to the Lord. So they're displaying that there at Bhadrika Ashram. Of course, there are great sages who have the vision. You may actually get their darshan, see them. So the appearance of Naranarayan as it comes in the Bhagavatam is mentioned in the fourth canto. There's a chapter called the genealogical table of the daughters of Manu. Manu had three daughters, Akuti, Prasuti, and Devahuti. And two sons, Uttanapada and Priyabrata. So, you know, there's a lot of genealogy in the Bhagavatam. So this begins in this fourth canto. We hear about the daughters of Manu. Prasuti, she was married to Daksha. And Daksha had, I think it's 17 daughters. They're a different list, but I think it's 17. And they were married to, Murti, the reservoir of all respectable qualities, gave birth to Sri Naranarayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it says, this is in purport, I think. According to the Matsya Purana, 3:10, Dharma, the father of Naranarayan Rishi, was born from the right breast of Brahma and later married 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha. The Lord himself appeared from the womb of Meru Devi. So Dharma was born directly from Lord Brahma, from his right breast, and he married 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha. So one of those daughters was Meru Devi, and her husband was Dharma. Here's something about his appearance. This is from the first chapter, fourth canto. On the occasion of the appearance of Naranarayan, the entire world was full of joy. Everyone's mind became tranquil, and thus in all directions, the air, the rivers, and the mountains became pleasant. And the heavenly planets' bands began to play, and they showered flowers from the sky. The pacified sages chanted Vedic prayers, and denizens of heaven, known as the Gandharvas and Kinnaras, sang. The beautiful damsels of the heavenly planets danced, and in this way, at the time of the appearance of Naranarayan, all signs of good fortune were visible. Just at that time, great demigods like Lord Brahma also offered their respectful prayers. So some of their prayers are given here. Then Maitreya says, O Vidura, thus the demigods worship with prayers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as the sage Naranarayan. Here again, in the translation, we have it as a singular, even though it's two persons. The Lord glanced upon them with mercy and then departed for Gandhamadana Hill. We often hear about Gandhamadana Hill in the Bhagavatam also. So the Prabhupada says that Gandhamadana Hill is Bhadrika Ashram, or Bhadrika Ashram is on Gandhamadana Hill. It's the same, at least the same general area of the Himalayas. It's also the same general area. In the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we hear that Vyasadeva went to perform his penitence, Shamya Pras. So Shamya Pras is also in the same area, Bhadarika Ashram. So this is an especially holy place of sages and incarnations. It says that Naranarayana Rishi, who is the partial expansion of Krishna. Now, Prabhupada uses the word partial here, but in other places he doesn't. He makes it sound like he's a plenary portion. He uses the word plenary portion. So Prabhupada is not always exact in how he uses these different expansions. This, I think the Sanskrit for this was Amsha, which just means a part. It can be translated in different ways. Anyway, that Naranarayana Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasties of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectively, to mitigate the burden of the world. So this is also a conception that's there. When Krishna and Arjuna go to visit Mahavishnu, Mahapurusha, and he also mentions that they're present on earth as Naranarayana Rishis. So sometimes people may have the idea that Krishna is an incarnation, that Krishna and Arjuna are incarnations of Naranarayana, but it's actually, of course, the other way around. But Arjuna is considered to be a representative of Nara in this Naranarayana Rishi duo. So Krishna is Narayana and Arjuna is Nara. He represents the living entity. Prabhupada says in the purport that Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Nara is a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Thus the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So also, now this is Lord Vrishabhdeva. Oh, this is in the context of Lord Vrishabhdeva. In full samadhi, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nara Narayana, who is Krishna in his plenary expansion. So here you see Prabhupada calls it plenary. By doing so, in the course of time, Maharaj Nadi was elevated to the spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. So Nadi is the father of Vrishabhdeva. So Nadi is, he went to Bhadarika Ashram. They have a list here of some people who went to Bhadarika Ashram. So this King Nadi is one. Kakudmi, the father of Revati, you may remember the story. Kakudmi wanted to marry his daughter to someone. He went to Brahmaloka. Lord Brahma said, you know, go back and marry her to Balaram. So this Kakudmi, after he married his daughter to Lord Balaram, then he went to Bhadarika Ashram. Muchakunda, of course, Krishna found Muchakunda in the cave. He led this Kaliyavana to him, and Muchakunda, with his glance, he killed Kaliyavana. Then Muchakunda offered prayers to the Lord, to Krishna. Then he left for Bhadarika Ashram. Dhruva Maharaj, which is quite interesting, because Dhruva Maharaj, he went to Vrindavan, Madhuban. Narada Muni sent him to Vrindavan to perform his austerities. So that's where he had darshan of the Lord, was in Vrindavan. But then, of course, he ruled for a long time, and then at the end of his life, there's a chapter, Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead, something like that. So where did he go? He went to Bhadarika Ashram. He didn't go back to Vrindavan. For some reason, he went to Bhadarika Ashram. And then this Nadi that I just mentioned, the father. Actually, it says Nadi and Nehru Devi. Not just King Nadi, but his wife also. They went to Bhadarika Ashram to attain perfection. So this is from the fifth canto. Now there's a section, I think this is in the context of that. There's a section of the fifth canto. Of course, you know there's the cosmography in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. So we hear about Bhumandala, and we hear about the different dvipas. And Jambudweep is one of them. And Jambudweep is made up of different varshas, areas of Jambudweep. So there's a section called the residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. And actually it's interesting because the residents of Jambudweep offer prayers begin in a previous chapter and end in the following chapter. So it covers parts of three chapters, but one chapter is called that the residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. So I believe this might be in the context of that chapter. But it says, the glories of the Supreme Personality, this is Shukadeva speaking, the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are inconceivable. He has appeared in the form of Naranarayana in the land of Parvarsha. Because this is about what the the residents of Bhadrapar should do. You know, in each one of these varshas that's mentioned, there's a particular form of the Lord there, and the devotees are offering prayers to that particular form. For example, in one of the places, Lord Nrisingadeva is worshipped there. And Prahlad Maharaj is leading the devotees there and offering prayers to Lord Nrisingadeva. So the same thing happens in different places. So in Bhadrapar, Narada Muni is leading the devotees and offering prayers to Nara Narayana. They're considered the special form for Bharat-Varsha is Nara Narayana. So they have special significance for the earth. First of all, of course, they're always there. Maybe this is explained here. So he has appeared in the form of Nara Narayana in the land of Bharat-Varsha in the place known as Bhadrika Ashram to favor his devotees by teaching them religion, knowledge, renunciation, spiritual power, sense control, and freedom from false ego. So these are all part of tapasya, you might say. Religion, knowledge, renunciation, spiritual power, sense control, and freedom from false ego. He is advanced in the opulence of spiritual assets, and he engages in executing austerity until the end of this millennium. This is the process of self-realization. So Prabhupada uses this translation, millennium. So sometimes it's a little vague what does the millennium actually mean. So the Sanskrit is a kalpa antam. So a means up to, kalpa means, kalpa is the day of Brahma, antam, the end. So millennium in this sense means the whole day of Brahma. So he appeared not too long ago, or they appeared not too long ago, and they will be residing there till the end of this particular day of Brahma. That's, of course, a very long time. You know, it's interesting, in the ninth canto, where we hear the pastime of Lord Ramchandra, when Vibhishan was given rule of Lanka, it said there that he was given the rule until the end of the Kalpa, Kalpanta also. So Vibhishan is apparently ruling in Sri Lanka somehow or other. Not able to go see him and make a visit, but according to the Bhagavatam, Lord Ram gave him the rule until the end of the Kalpa. So what else do we have here? The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature, Narada Pancharatra. So this is also in the context of Narada. Narada composed the Narada Pancharatra, which of course is very important. We are engaged in at least our principles of deity worship, and we live our lives are based on the Pancharatra. So one of the important ones is Narada Pancharatra. So it says here that Narada instructed Savarni Manu in Narada Pancharatra in order to teach those inhabitants of Bharatavarsha who strictly follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma how to achieve the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, Narada Muni, along with other inhabitants of Bharatavarsha, always engages in the service of Nara Narayana. So the Narada has that's his ashram. We often hear, of course, Narada doesn't stay in place very long, but we often hear that after some pastime, then you hear that Narada returned to his ashram, or to Bhadrika ashram. That's his home base, you might say. He's a Parivaraja Kacharya, of course, Paramahansa, liberated soul, Devarshi. But if you wanted to say that he has a home base, that's his home base, at least on this planet. He also goes to Brahma Loka, also. Because Lord Brahma is his father. He can go anywhere he wants. So. Prabhupada uses, when he mentions the four Kumaras, for example, he says they wandered around at will. So they just go wherever they want, inspired by their devotion to the Lord. So then in the 11th canto, we have the story of Nara Narayana's appearance. And what happened then was Nara Narayana, of course, they came to execute austerities, and they were executing austerities. And Lord Brahma this time, was it? Indra. You know, Indra, he gets nervous when sages perform austerity because he's afraid they're going to take his job, steal his post. So he sent some of his associates to make him fall down, basically. Entrapment, you know, they call it legally. To try to entrap Cupid. And just like in also Haridas Thakur's Leelas, you know, he was trying to be entrapped, catching red-handed, consorting with a woman. So to break his tapasya, which of course would take away his power, he wouldn't get Indra's throne. So Indra sent. So I'll read some of the verses there. The primeval Lord, understanding the... Oh, I'm sorry. There's something from the summary. Anyway, what happens is that he sent these demigods, springtime personified, and the wonderful wind, and these beautiful damsels, and to disturb him. But Narayana Rishi, of course, he wasn't at all disturbed. And let me just read a few verses here. This is after Narayana Rishi. He's not disturbed. So it says, the primeval Lord, understanding the offense committed by Indra, did not become proud. Instead, he spoke laughingly as follows to Cupid. Cupid was one of them that was sent. And his followers, who were trembling before him. Do not fear, O mighty Madan, O wind god, and wives of the demigods. Rather, please accept these gifts I am offering you and kindly sanctify my ashram by your presence. So they came to make him fall down, but he received them like as if they were guests. Please, come into my place, come into my ashram, and I'll give you these gifts. Then the demigods offered prayers to the Lord. Demigods, these personalities who had come, they praised the Lord. While the demigods were thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes with many women who were astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaging in the Lord's service. So the demigods saw these amazingly beautiful women, and they thought, well, we have no power over him. And then the Lord told them, please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable. She will become the ornament of the heavenly planets. Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of the demigods selected Urvashi, the best of the Apsaras. Placing her in front of them out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. So this, at least according to this story, is the source of Urvashi. Now you often hear about Urvashi. She comes into play in the Bhagavatam. And Uru means the thigh. It's said that she was created from Narayana's thigh in this pastime. So she went to the heavenly planets. So there's a mention of Narayana Rishi, Narayana Rishi, by Lord Kapiladeva. You know, there's the section, of course, Lord Kapiladeva's instructions cover a lot of chapters, but there's one where he talks about the travels of the living entity, and the living entity, we hear about the man dying, and his relatives are all there, then he gets dragged to hell, then he takes birth in a womb, and he has that horrible situation within the womb. So the whole thing is really kind of frightening to read about. This is material existence. So after that, in Kapiladeva, then he says that unfortunately the child, you know, gets pampered by in his next birth, gets pampered again, and then basically falls into Maya, falls down, and he has to go through that whole thing again. So Kapiladeva is warning, be careful. This material existence is so dangerous. And in the context of that, He speaks a handful of verses about the danger of association with women. You may remember this section of verses. So there's one of the last verses in that section. It says, Tatshrishta shrishta shrishte shu kona kanditi puman rishim narayanam rite yoshin maya maya. He says, among all living entities created by Lord Brahma, including demigods, animals, and humans, none but the sage Narayana is immune from the influence of Maya in the form of woman. So, of course, this is a really heavy section of the Bhagavatam. Kapiladeva is really trying to make the point. You have to be careful, and this is one of the main attractions of the material world. And don't think you're above it. Only Narayana Rishi is above the attraction, the allure, the danger of attraction to women. Or Maya in the form, Yoshin Maya Maya, says Maya in the form of woman. So Maya can come in different forms, so that's one of the forms. So let's see about some other things here. Oh, that, yeah, they're different. We recently also, one of the things we read recently in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam was the whole story of Markandeya Rishi. So Markandeya Rishi, he was a devotee of Narayana. And he, you know, the whole arrangement where he wanted to see the universal devastation, it was Narayana Rishi who made this happen. He's the one who said, basically, oh, that's what you want, so be it. And then the whole thing happened, and then Markandeya said, whoa, this is a little more than I asked for here. But, so that was all arranged by Narayana Rishi. Let's see. Okay, so I'll just end here. Here's a prayer to Narayana Rishi. Actually, what was this here? I had something I added at the end. Oh, Narayana Rishi. This is from a summary of 1087. Oh, I know what it was. You know, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the 87th chapter, is prayers by the personified Vedas. In the beginning of that chapter, Shukadeva Goswami, well, I'll just read this part of the summary. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami how the Vedas can directly refer to the Supreme Absolute Truth, Brahman, since the Vedas deal with the material realm, governed by the three modes of nature, and Brahman is completely transcendental to these modes. So this is what incites this whole prayers by the personified Vedas, but this is the context. In reply, Shukadeva Goswami described an ancient encounter between Sri Narayana Rishi and Narada Muni at Bhadrikashram. Traveling to that sacred hermitage, Narada found the Lord surrounded by exalted residents of the nearby village of Kalapa. I'll just make a footnote here. Kalapa Gram is mentioned a couple of times in the Bhagavatam. So Kalapa Gram is in the same area also. So in the genealogy, in a couple of places, a couple of persons are mentioned, and they're both said that they will start, they went to Bhadrikashram when they, at the end of their reign as kings, and they're waiting there till the end of Kali Yuga, and they will begin the Surya dynasty and the Moon dynasty in the beginning of the next Satya Yuga. So the one is named Madhu. He will begin the Surya dynasty in Satya Yuga, and one is named Devapi, who was the elder brother of King Shantanu. So he'll begin the Soma dynasty, the Moon dynasty. So they're living there in this Kalapa Gram, which was just mentioned here. They're both living there now. Prabhupada says they're there in yogic meditation, waiting for the end of Kali Yuga. So they'll begin these dynasties at the beginning of Satya Yuga. So to continue this summary of it, some of this, 87th chapter, 10th canto. After bowing down to Narayana Rishi and his associates, Narada submitted this same question to him. In reply, Narayana Rishi related an account of how this very question had been discussed long ago among the sages living on Janaloka. Once these sages, feeling inquisitive about the nature of the Absolute Truth, chose Sanandana Kumar to speak on the subject. I thought I'd mention this since I just gave class on Kumar. As I mentioned, often Sanat Kumar is speaking. So here we see Sanandana Kumar is speaking on Janaloka, and he's asking the same question. Sanandana Kumar He told them how the numerous personified Vedas appearing as the first emanations from the breathing of Lord Narayana recited prayers for glorification just before the creation. Sananda then proceeded to recite these elaborate prayers. So I don't know if you followed all of that, but the basic idea is, in order to answer Pariksit Maharaj's question about how the Vedas, which deal with material things, how can they give us knowledge of Brahman, which is transcendental? So he answered by saying, well, actually, Narada Muni was talking to Narayana Rishi about this, and he spoke about a meeting of sages, the four Kumaras, on Janaloka, where they were discussing this question. So we have these different levels of the conversation going on. So here is the here's a prayer. This is from, I guess this is one of the prayers that's being offered to Lord Narayana Rishi. This particular one is in prose, although there are other ones there that are in poetry. This one is in prose. You might be able to follow some of it. You listen, you hear some of the words. Om namo bhagavate upashyama shilayo parantatmatmyaya. Yes, Nyaya. Namo kinchana vittaya Rishi Rishabhaya Nara Narayanaya Paramahamsa Paramagurave
Atma Rama Adipataye Namo Nama.
Oh, probably a few familiar words in that. So this is the translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Nara Narayana, the best of all saintly persons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
He is the most self-controlled and self-realized. He is free from false prestige, and he is the asset of persons who have no material possessions.
Namo Kinchana Vittaya.
He is the spiritual master of all Paramahamsas, who are the most exalted human beings, and he is the master of the self-realized. Let me offer my repeated obeisances at his lotus feet.
So again, the idea is that Narada Muni is leading everyone on earth in offering prayers to Nara Narayana and Rishi.
Well, in one sense you can say Narada is offering his prayers on our behalf, so we're getting some benefit by his,
and also in some inconceivable way by Nara Narayana and Rishi's austerities we're getting benefit as well.
So the translation again, in the fourth incarnation the Lord became Nara and Narayana, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances to control the senses.
Earlier you mentioned the four diamonds and the Lord Shiva is worshipped near or at the four diamonds or near the four. So in Dwarka, I remember when the Yadu dynasty were to disappear from the earth, Lord Krishna took them to Prabhas, where Lord Shiva is.
Uh-huh.
You know, because they said if they were to die in Dwarka, then they have to go back to the transcendental.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were demigods, so they couldn't die in Dwarka, so they went to Lord Shiva's place in Prabhas.
Uh-huh.
So I guess Prabhas is here to Dwarka.
Yeah, there are certainly Shiva temples in these, because the Shankaracharyas, of course, they tend to worship Lord Shiva. They have their main Shankaracharyas, as they're called, are at these four places. Their main mutts are at these Charadhamas. But Lord Shiva is also worshipped in these places.
What was the answer that they gave for the question about?
The basic answer, the question about the Vedas, is it's explained in one of the first verses in that 87th chapter. It's a little hard to decipher from the translation, but it's explained in the purport that the idea is that the Lord, he gives the Vedas power, and he gives us power. He gives human beings the power to hear the sound of the Vedas and experience transcendence, or that's how Brahman, or transcendence, the spiritual world, is revealed through the Vedas. In other words, Krishna empowered the Vedas to communicate with us in that way, and he empowered us, human beings. He gave human beings the ability, just by hearing that sound, we're able to understand transcendence. That's the essence of the reply, the answer.
I just kind of remembered it slightly different, is that the senses had two functions. They had the function for sense gratification, but they were also built for the function for self-realization.
Mm-hmm.
So the same senses, if they're used in devotional service, can reveal Krishna, but when they're used in sense gratification, then it's
Because, well, it's interesting because, I mean, I had this question when I first became a devotee. Because we tell people you have imperfect senses, so you can't get truth through your imperfect senses. You can't get perfect knowledge. But then we tell them, well, you have to hear, feel. So sometimes, well, wait a minute, you just told me my hearing is imperfect, so how can I get perfect knowledge through my imperfect sense of hearing? But the sense is actually in another. Krishna has created it, so for that purpose, it's perfect. For that purpose, not for getting information of this material world and figuring everything out through your senses, but through the sense of hearing, And also, of course, engaging the others, with the senses become purified by engaging them in Krishna service. So in that sense, they're perfect for the purpose of self-realization when they're transformed by connecting them with Brahma, Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound.
I also remember, I think Tom Maharprabhu gave class on, I think two times in that week, whenever we were reading the 87th chapter.
Uh-huh.
And I got hypnotized with that because the question was asked that the mind is material. How is possible to perceive or conceive the absolute Brahman, which is beyond material? And the answer was given, what I remember, that by the power of bhakti, which is emanating from the lotus feet of the Lord, which is that lotus feet found in the heart of the devotee. So when the devotee speaks, actually from the lotus feet of the Lord, the power of bhakti comes and allow the mind, the hearer, audience, to perceive and conceive that. I thought that was very nice. That was very...
It penetrates.
Yes.
Through our coverings.
Hare Krishna, very nice logical words. At the beginning of the verse, it's described that, or not the purport, it's described that Narayan is specifically undergoing austerities for penances for the purpose of elevating mankind, elevating the individual. And that as that representation, we are allowed to participate in doing the same for others. But the word in the purport was indicates that those who are favorable for others who are...
Yeah,
favorable.
Amiable living entities.
Yes.
That phrase was there. I think that was from another verse. I didn't look it up. I wanted to see what the Sanskrit was, but I didn't look it up.
So without that favorability, the capacity for accepting that realization is allowed.
Yeah, we have to make ourselves suitable receptacles for the mercy. Yeah, that's certainly a theme. Just like there are places where the idea comes up, well, if you serve Krishna, then everyone benefits. But Prabhupada has explained it this way, but you have to be connected to Krishna. Connect to Krishna, then you will benefit. So the same idea is presented here. We can benefit by the austerities as long as we make ourselves proper receptacles for the mercy that they're giving out.
So we can only benefit from Narayana's austerities and penances by being favorable towards them.
Yeah. Now there may be a sense in which the whole world, in any case, has benefited because the Lord is present here on this planet. So the planet must be benefiting in some way from that. That's why part of the reason the demigods they praise birth and bhavarsha because there's so many holy places there. So anybody who's living on this planet gets benefit from it. I often think of this in the context of chanting Krishna's name, because even when there's a separation of the syllables, you know that example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you say halam riktam, you're saying hari, even though lam is in the beginning there. I was just actually, Satyaraj Prabhu recently wrote an article on this. This was part of the article. And he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur as saying, there's not so much benefit. There's some benefit. But when there's an interruption, there's not so much benefit. But still, I often think, how is it possible that somebody isn't saying one of the names of Krishna? There's innumerable forms of Krishna. He has innumerable names. So it would seem like everybody must be saying Krishna's name. So they'll be getting some benefit just by being present on this earth. So there are other ways in which this earth is special. Like the Bharatvarsha, however you look. Actually, it's interesting, in one purport, Prabhupada's talking about Bharatvarsha, and he says India. Then two sentences later, he says this planet. He calls both India and this planet Bharatvarsha the same purport. So there are different ways to look at it. Anyway, so they continue. Go ahead.
The Srila Prabhupada said that the safest place in this material world is in kirtan. The holy name.
When you're in kirtan, then you're not in this material world. You're in a bubble.
You lose your inhibitions.
Yeah. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada.